Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Orient Cement Q4 FY22 and FY22 earnings conference call hosted by ICICI Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Krupal Maniar from ICICI Securities Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Faizan. Good afternoon and a warm welcome to everyone. On behalf of ICICI Securities, we welcome you to the fourth quarter and FY22 earnings call of Orient Cement Limited. On the call, we have with us Mr. Deepak Khetrapal, MD and CEO, and Mr. Soumitra Bhattacharya, CFO of the company. At this point of time, I will hand over the floor to Mr. Deepak Khetrapal for his opening remarks, which will be followed by interactive Q&A session. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good afternoon, everyone, and a very warm welcome to this investors analyst call that we do every quarter. And thank you for sparing your time to come and listen to us and listen to what we've been up to in the last quarter and the last year also in some ways. And with me on this call from Orient Cement is Soumitra Bhattacharya, our CFO, and also we have with us our investor relations in charge, Manish Agarwal, who stays in touch with most of you whenever you need clarification. So thank you very much for your patience when the line was misbehaving a little bit. Okay, so let me, without wasting much of your time, let me just start getting into what we have done in the last quarter. I'm sure, you know, although not all the results are out for the cement industry by now, but most of the results which have come out are very clearly reflecting the difficulties that the industry is facing, the difficult times. I mean, it's been a tough quarter, as has been I think the whole year. As the year went by, the costs just kept building up, and the especially the cost of power and fuel, which is largely about coal, they've been through the sky. We know, I mean, all of you, I'm sure, monitor those numbers as closely as I do. And while power and fuel is one element, but the fact of the matter is almost all commodities, all minerals, diesel, whatever we touch is very expensive. That obviously is posing huge challenges to an industry which ends up spending 20% plus on just moving the material around, and also a very, very large amount on power and fuel. So it's been tough here, but I think some of us have managed that storm a little bit better than others, and we'll go through how we've done. For us, on the demand side, we have had some headwinds, especially in southern India, where demand has been soft. Maharashtra for us has been somewhat better, though not by much. Pricing hasn't been great, though it's been better than what it could have been. I mean, we've seen worse pricing, so I would say it's not been great. We wish it was a little better, but it's not been that bad as we've seen in the past. I'm sure all of you have already seen our results and have formed some preliminary views about our Q4 results. But before I come specifically to Q4, some of the things I want to just call out right up front. I think the most notable feature that interests all the investors in the company has been in the past 2 years, our debt level. And I'm happy to report that in FY22, we've repaid the debt, the project loan that we've taken by as much as 486 crores, whereas not even a penny was due to be paid this year. And this fact actually was reminded to me by one of your colleagues and friends who is on the call also. So he specifically reminded me, saying, you know, this has been, and obviously I thought I'll call it out right at the start. Our net debt now, net of cash that we hold, held on 31st of March, has been at 260-270 crores. That's it. The other thing, for the full year, if we look at it, we have managed to cross the EBITDA of 600 crores for the first time in our less working history, which is up 6-7%. The EBITDA for the year, higher by this much percentage, from whatever results I have come across so far this year, I think we seem to be the only company who, in terms of absolute EBITDA in rupees crores, has shown a higher this thing compared to last year. And so that we do take a huge amount of satisfaction from there. The drop in EBITDA per ton for the full year is really marginal. I mean, we are just 20-odd rupees off from what we had EBITDA per ton last year. It looks like a miracle given the kind of year that it's been, but like I said, we're happy to be where we are. Our PBT for the year is up 21% over last year. Profit after tax is also up about 23%. Like I said, these numbers make us happy, and I'm hopeful that it will also make the investors community happy to see that in a difficult year we are where we are. And also looking at the difficulties that the rest of the industry seems to be at least reporting through their performance numbers. Specifically, if we start talking about Q4, on the surface, yes, we have lost volumes and also EBITDA over the same quarter last year. It's a fact, I mean, it's very, very visible there. But here's a caveat. If we remember how exceptionally, absolutely outstandingly good our Q4 last year was, perhaps it was to be expected that we'll not be able to touch that level this year, especially with all the other headwinds. But here I also want to make a point about, you know, the temporal, the over time comparisons that we make. While these comparisons have their own uses, specifically I'm referring to more, you know, quarter to quarter, YOY, QOQ, but on quarterly levels, it masks a few things. And also the perspectives get distorted a little bit by what we are being compared against. So when we do badly in any quarter, a year later, even if we do normal business without being very good, we start looking a lot better without being necessarily good, right? And the same applies to when you're being compared against a great quarter. So that's a bit of a challenge in terms of perspective for us to say, oh, you've not done as well as last year, last quarter. But in our minds, even last year when that happened, we were very proud about it, but we knew that it's unlikely to be repeated. So it's not a surprise for us, although the wish was there that we can do that and even better, but we knew that it's not likely to happen. The second part about the quarterly comparison always is, which I think is equally important for us to remember, in the quarter-to-quarter variation, we are not able to capture movement in some of the costs which are, I would say, discretionary costs in terms of timing. So in one quarter, I may spend, the annual shutdowns happen for all the kilns, all the mills, the boilers, or the CPP. Now, each quarter we decide to do is a function of many variables that we keep working against. Now, in one particular quarter, you spend a large amount on maintenance cost, and in the previous quarter, it didn't happen in that quarter, it happened in another quarter, and the picture gets distorted. Same thing also applies to other discretionary costs, like when do you invest your money in an advertising campaign. So these are the, I would say, the limitations of quarterly numbers, which I just thought I'll call out as a reminder to all of us. But anyway, I think given where we are, we have to respect the traditions of the capital markets, and here are the quarterly numbers. So our volume drop over last year in this quarter has been 12%. Now this is the distortion that I was talking about. If you look at QOQ basis, the preceding quarter, we are 33% in volumes, right? Revenues, although the volume drop is 12% around, revenue down is just about 4% YOY. And on quarterly basis, quarter to quarter, we are 30% up over the preceding quarter. On full year basis, our revenues are up 17%, and full year basis, our volumes are up about 8%. So obviously, the balance 17% has come from higher realizations, which are up 10% over the same quarter last year. EBITDA in absolute terms is 24% lower for Q4 compared with the same quarter last year. But it's sequentially, it is up 29% over the preceding quarter. So more than the, like I said, I mean, quarterly numbers have to be respected, they have to be shared. Equally important is because we are at the year end now, because the annual accounts also have been approved, we look at the annual number also. Now, one thing which I just hope that people are realizing, if you make a little bit of effort to see the story which our numbers of this year, and even to a large extent of even the preceding year, are conveying is that we at Orient Cement continue to pursue our strategy of focusing on our profitability and cash flows. And you know, on many occasions, we have been taking a conscious call to walk away from some businesses or some orders from the customers where our increase in costs were not being fully compensated for. And when we say the costs have not been compensated for, we were not looking at the costs that we incurred in yesterday or last week or last month. We've always been working on what is my replacement cost of the resources consumed. If I'm going to be consuming my coal, what is the today's market price of coal, and would the order that's on the table pay me for the replacement cost of the coal? I don't know how many other companies are doing it, but we are religiously following that. And as a result of that, in many situations, we've had to take a very difficult call of saying no to an order, and we haven't done that. We haven't accepted those orders, and that's been, those tough calls have been there, but they've enabled us to manage the situation a lot better. Coal, or rather the fuel situation, has not been easy. We all know that. So what we have tried to do, I think, and this is, I'm repeating, I know in the last quarters, investors' calls also, I made the same statement. We have been trying to optimize our operations based on the availability and the cost, replacement cost of the scarce resources, which happen to be coal, pet coke, which are the large resources that we consume. So we have been trying to optimize rather than the capacity utilization or anything else. We've been saying, what is the availability looking like? What are the costs looking like? What are the replacement costs looking like? And what business makes sense and what business does not make sense? We saw no point in burning our expensive and scarce fuel and sell more to some segments of the market who didn't offer us the replacement cost of fuel. Plus, obviously, something for our shareholders, because even if they just replace or pay for the cost of fuel and nothing for no margins for the shareholders, even that is not very attractive business. And if you ask my salespeople, they've been trained now to think, and the mantra that we follow and the phrase that we use quite often is, we do quality sales, not all sales. And it's been slowly being drilled down, and all of you, I'm sure, are quite aware of how difficult it is for a salesperson to say no to a customer saying, at this price, we will not take the order. But thankfully, we are preparing them mentally, psychologically, strategically. And so that's been one big shift that we are successfully making in this company. And that's the reason why at times our volumes may not look good, but our profitability, fortunately, is being sustained. So quarterly numbers I have given you, I'll perhaps just once again quickly refer to the annual numbers that we have. The full year picture, we have, as I mentioned, the volume growth of about 8%, which I think is very much par for course. So 8% overall volume growth for the full year very clearly indicates that we have not been losing market share to competition. Despite the fact that we've been selective about the business, 8% growth is completely at par. I've seen the numbers that are coming out from our markets. We are in line with what the market growth is. And so if anybody has the anxiety that by shifting from all sales to quality sales, are we conceding in a very concerning manner the market share? The numbers don't tell us that. We've had an EBITDA growth of over 6%. EBITDA per ton for Q4 is still 950 rupees plus. For the full year, it's 1100 rupees ballpark. And here is the 20 odd rupees drop that we have in EBITDA per ton for the full year compared to the previous year, I think is something which I want all of you to take note of. I mean, to sustain EBITDA almost at the same level, 20 odd rupees drop is something which I do want you people to remember. It's per ton EBITDA we have managed to defend despite all the cost pressures that we've had. We've obviously not done the volumes that we had planned because when we started the year, even during the middle of the year, we kept saying that we are planning to do total sales of 60 lakh tons, which obviously have not happened. And here I think the challenge arose more in the second half because the first half we were getting the volumes that were planned. In the second half, we started seeing more and more difficulty in the marketplace, which I think marketplace is the industry as a whole. And despite not being able to do the volumes because the opportunities or the right opportunities were not there, we've chosen business with profits. And in comparison, like I said, with the results of the industry so far, we don't look so bad. With the huge repayment, as I said, of loans that we made. Obviously, whatever has been the shift in EBITDA, I said a marginal fall. If we look at the PBT, which obviously has benefited from the deleveraging and from the repayment of loans that we started doing at very early in the financial year. So PBT is up to 404 crores. So the two landmarks, or rather, I would say, milestones that we've crossed this year are, one is EBITDA at 600 crores and PBT at 400 crores. These are the high numbers for us. And compared to 333 crores of last year, it's a significant jump. Debt as on March 31st, as I mentioned, on the books is 310 crores. Net of cash is about 260, 270 crores in that range. The power and fuel costs in Q4 particularly have been very, very high by our own reckoning at 1326 thereabouts. We have been very concerned about it. But the only solace that comes is that we are not the only one to incur this. And in fact, the industry costs average look to be higher than what we have. And this is, again, to be mindful that when we are reporting these costs, we still do not have the benefit of a waste heat recovery system and other cheaper sources of power like many of other peers have. So, and that is a handicap which we are working to remove as we go. The freight cost, again, for those of you who might be wondering that when we are choosing business very carefully, how is it that our realization per ton is marginally lower than the preceding quarter? Well, that's a valid question. But I just want to draw your attention to another fact that realization is one part. Second part of the equation also is how far the customer is who is willing to pay me a higher price. And we carefully chose the markets nearby where the freight costs are lower, even though the prices were a little low. So net of freight, we were still better off selling to these customers. So as a result of that, if you look at my freight costs, they also have been moderated marginally because of the selection of the markets that we made. So that is, this is something that I'm not shying away from the fact that the realizations look a little low, but it's nothing to do with just the pricing. It's also a question of the market mix that we found ideal looking at the realization net of freight. All the other operating costs have been there, which, again, like I said, is a function of partly, obviously, many of those costs are variable in nature, which get reported as other costs. But some of them, like I said, maintenance costs and advertising costs, they've been higher this year over last year, same quarter, because the timing of these activities last year was quite different from what we've done this year. Besides, let's say, being choosy about the business that we accept, our strategy of asking for better pricing for our product, which in our own ways we've been calling it brand repositioning, and also I've mentioned that as an effort toward bridging the price gap that we had been handicapped with vis-a-vis the A-category brands. So that effort has been on and we've been gaining further ground there. And obviously topped up by the fact that the success, the gradual success that we were seeking of our premium product, which is Strongcrete, that's been sort of in a way moving ahead very, very encouragingly. And as a result of that, the overall profitability, I think, has been achieved despite the huge headwinds that all of us are aware of. I have also spoken about them. We continue to consolidate and redefine our customer base and also our channel partners. We have been very choosy, and in fact, while other companies are trying to expand into more and more counters, we are being careful as to where we want our product to be seen. And that is, again, an outcome of the strategy that we have to reposition our brands. We also continue to strengthen our brand presence through more effective and innovative communications. So many of you would have seen the kind of films that we've released largely on social media. The Good Poetry Project, I'm surprised how much traction that is getting to us from everybody who cares for our company and our talent. So these are some of the innovative things that we have been doing. Most importantly, we continue to strengthen our on-ground services for quick delivery of our product, for product being available wherever the customer needs it to have the stock available easily, and also for the technical support for our customers to follow better construction practices. That also has been strengthened and will keep getting strengthened. Like I said, branding investments again in this particular year, given the second wave of COVID and also slow recovery in Q2, in Q3, and even more so in Q4, we obviously spent a lot more on advertising and sales promotion. So that also helps, but it looks higher as expenses. But it's more of an investment than expenditure. Okay, so comes some of the hygiene questions that I'm sure all of you do seek answers to, which I'll, in a proactive manner, I'll just give you those details. Our total, I would say, blended cement, as all of you asked in this quarter, has actually been nearly 63%, 62.5, 62.6% in that range of the blended cement sale. Strongcrete during this particular quarter has registered a 64% growth over last year. As I said, that's a huge matter of pride for us, because at the price that we sell, we are happy to see this traction. And today in Q4, the strongcrete stood at 14% of our B2C sales. Our ambition was to do 10%. In this quarter, we finished at 14%. Our B2B sale is under 40%, a little under 40, which, as we know, balance is all over B2C sales. In the last quarter, the sales mix, again, because it's a question that many of you always ask me, so I'm giving you the answer. We sold 53% in West, we sold 37% in South, and we sold 10% largely in Central India. The rail dispatches throughout the year have been more, and that's been our effort to optimize our freight and logistics costs. So as a result of that, this year in Q4, we've actually dispatched as much as 25% of our material using railways. So which has also helped us in moderating the inflation impact of the diesel, which is hurting everyone. I think the other question that normally I get asked is the fuel mix for the quarter. So here is the fuel mix. And one of the things which I missed out, which I waited for this point to come, so that I can give you the full information. Part of the reason why the inflation in our fuel cost is not as high as the most of the industry seems to have seen is, one obviously was the way we were covering our fuel. We remained very tight. We didn't sort of book expensive fuel well ahead to maintain fuel security. So maybe fuel security, partially we took a few risks. Fortunately, we never ran out of fuel. Whenever we needed the fuel was there. But there were days when we were very anxious, so we kept very close to what the developments in the market was and only booked what was necessary, rather than building stocks which look like a luxury to get this time. So as a result of all those things, and second part of managing fuel costs much better has been our thrust on alternate fuels, and that I spoke earlier also, but I'm repeating. Repeating because in this particular quarter, our alternative fuels have been as high as 17%, which I think is a very, very good number to get to, and we obviously are not even satisfied even now. And not just as a percentage, I'm giving you the number of alternate fuels. We've started consuming, alternate fuels include expensive alternate fuels like carbon black. They also include the agro waste. But in our case, we've tried to increase as much as possible the municipal waste, the hazardous waste, the liquid the hazardous waste. We also have been started using the RDF, the refuse-derived fuel. So all those things have gone into helping us moderate the fuel cost. But besides the Q4 number of 17% of AFR, domestic coal has been 51%, and pet coke has been 24%, and imported coal at about 8%. So that's the fuel mix for the quarter. By and large, I think that's how the quarter has been, and maybe it's time for me to just take a pause, take a sip of water, and start waiting for your questions to come, and I'll answer as we go.
So Deepak, Tomitro here, just maybe you should just touch upon the BRSR and the sustainability journey as well.
Okay, yeah, thanks Tomitro for reminding me. So as we keep saying, and in the annual reports, we have talked about our efforts towards sustainability, starting with despite the small size that we have of just about 5 million tons at that time, we perhaps were the first, the smallest company in the world to join something which we call Cement Sustainability Initiative, CSI, which was being run under the aegis of World Business Council for Sustainable Development. So that's how we are committed towards sustainability. So This year, although it is not mandatory for us to issue the BRSR report by the board, voluntarily we have actually prepared the report, which has been approved by our board yesterday, and it will reach all of you along with the annual report that we send out. It will be so that all the data that needed to be collected has been collected and put in, and we are obviously making commitments towards meeting the SDGs as defined by the UN, and also towards carbon neutrality, which even our Prime Minister recently in one of the international meetings has promised that India will work towards, and India will work towards that based on, I would say, the industries like cement, which are heavy consumers of fossil fuels and heavy consumers of other natural resources. So BRSR has been approved by the board yesterday. It's going into print soon and will reach all of you very, very soon. You just need to remember it was not mandatory for us this year, but we've chosen to do that. And hopefully very soon, based on now all that data has been collected and it's been audited by outside agencies, we are also all set to now issue an ESG report in the next couple of months. So the work is starting on that. The first, we needed to have the data. The data enabled us to do the BRSR, and that will enable us to issue a full ESG report also soon enough. So Sumitra, thanks for reminding. I think that's an important thing which I think investors are looking for. So all the data is coming your way along with the annual report. All right. Let's wait for the questions now.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 at this time. The first question is from the line of Rajesh Ravi from HDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good afternoon and congratulations on good set of numbers in first half environment. My question pertains to the fuel mix, which you obviously touched upon. Could you share how has this changed quarter on quarter, and what is the thought process in terms of this high share of green fuel that you have been, or alternate fuel, which you have been able to achieve? Would that 15% plus number seem sustainable in next few quarters?
Sure. No, Rajesh, I think the anxiety on what the fuel mix will be in the coming quarter or two or three has been obviously haunting all of us in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
The fuel mix will remain very dynamic. So there's no forecast that I can give you beyond the fact that maybe as of now, about a month ago, we were running very, very low inventories. But as the crisis seems to be not slowing down, and as things keep looking more and more difficult, in the recent times, we've gone ahead and booked a fuel. I think we seem to be well covered right now for fuel availability for at least next 8 weeks or thereabouts, maybe a little more. Not in stock, but we have booked and confirmed that it will be available to us. Okay, so that gives us some bit of visibility only for this quarter. Going forward, again, like I said, it will be dynamic, whether petcoke becomes more useful or whatever. I think the most operative part of your question, if I understood, was the high or higher than industry level. I mean, if you could say high, if you ask me, I'm not happy with this level also. I would rather have 25-30% of alternate fuels.
Mm-hmm.
That is a function, Rajesh, of also the availability, right?
Correct.
So wherever, for example, around our Chitapur plant, it's very difficult to get agro waste because there's just too many power plants are there and not enough for agro waste being generated. Whereas Devapur plant has the benefit of being an agrarian area, we get a lot more of that.
Mm-hmm.
So at Chitapur plant, we choose to use more of hazardous waste, the municipal waste, the RF, the RDF and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There also we are running into a challenge in terms of availability. So as of now, we are managing it through a mix of different strategies at both the plants where kilns are there. And the profile of this being used is different. So, but please remember, percentage is just one number. It also needs to have more details about what is the fuel, because if I keep using this 15%, 17%, 20% of carbon black, not gaining as much benefit from it, because carbon black has become expensive, right? So, and post that comes aggregation. Then, so we are focusing more and more on the AFR, which is also cheaper in cost. Some of it is now being delivered to us at negative cost also, especially for some, hazardous liquid waste. Now, it's coming to us at a negative cost simply because we have invested money into creating the infrastructure which can handle this liquid hazardous waste. Without that, you can't use it. You're putting your own people at risk if you bring that in. So we invested in that in time, so which should hold us in good stead. And that's the effort going to be. Percentage AFR is only part of the picture. Cost of that AFR is equally important, and we remain focused on availability as much as the cost. So I can't tell you exact number, but the effort would be to stay between 15% and 20% in the coming year.
Okay, great. So last two quarters you have been able to achieve that, and you are hopeful that at least 15% plus is a comfortable number to work with.
That's right. And 15%, mind you, of including some fuel which is coming to us at negative cost also.
Correct.
Negative cost, people pay us to burn it because it's a nuisance for them to handle.
So that would significantly curtail your inflationary impact from the main sources.
Absolutely, and hoping for that. Yeah, absolutely hoping for that.
And this, when you say coal was around this 52% domestic coal, is it fair to assume all of that would be the linkage coal?
Yes, mostly linkage, maybe a small quantities here and there to meet some demand we may have bought in open auction, but largely linkage.
Okay. And in this quarter also, the mix would broadly remain, in favor of domestic and some of petcoke, right? And assuming AFR remains close to around 15-20% range.
It's unlikely to change dramatically because I given the where the plants are located, more or less the preference is very clear where the petcoke is usable, where it's not usable.
Right.
Yeah. So largely it should remain.
Correct. And last question on the capex front. Now a strong balance sheet, healthy cash flows. What are our thought process on the expansions? Where are we vis-a-vis our, last announced expansion plans?
So I didn't touch that upon in my initial remarks simply because we are on track, and as I had mentioned, we are completely on track because as I mentioned, there are various processes, right, that you have to go through before you. But we do stay as of now completely on track to commission the enhanced brownfield capacity at Devapur and also the at Teroda, the power plant of Adani, is the grinding unit that we are going to be setting up in FY20. By FY24, both should be up and running.
Okay. This Devapur is brownfield. This debottlenecking is over. Now the brownfield is what you are looking at in FY24. Right.
The line 4. We have three lines there. We have already. In fact, this is the briefing I thought I gave last quarter.
Yes, you have given last quarter. Yes.
So we are going to be putting up a kiln of the same size that we have at Chittapur, which is a 3 million ton capacity, as you know. So kiln will be of the same size. We'll add maybe a million and a half tons of additional grinding on site at Devapur and 2 million ton grinding capacity in Teroda. So that stays as it is. There's no change in that, either in terms of timeline or anything else.
Okay. Great, sir. Thank you. All the best. We'll come back and see you.
Thank you, Rajesh.
Thank you. Participants, to ask a question, you may press star and one. The next question is from the line of Amit Murarka from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon and thanks for the opportunity. So, we have been seeing so much of cost inflation, and while we manage it better than others, but what's the outlook on the cost going into Q1 and Q2? What kind of increases is expected on power and fuel?
Amit, we can only talk about from the perspective of what we managed to book so far, as I mentioned. And those costs over the exit costs of last year, they would definitely be higher. That's one question. But they will be higher, hopefully, by low double digits. So 12%, 13% or thereabouts higher than what we saw the exit of the last quarter. So they are definitely on the way up. Even now, there's no relief there, especially for us because having exhausted all the avenues which are available to us to keep buying more economical fuel, they seem to have been exhausted now. We are just about the optimum mix, and if in that mix the costs go up, the costs straight away hit us.
Sure. What I understand is that so far in this quarter, there has not been a price hike in your markets, which is Maharashtra, AP, Telangana. So is that understanding correct? And if so, then what is the reason that the hikes are not happening with such a high cost inflation?
Well, you're right. I mean, we need the prices to be higher in the market to recover the ongoing increase in cost. Like I said, last year, more or less, we managed to recover. Why the prices have not gone up is obviously a matter of, the demand not being as good as it needs to be. That's always the biggest pressure. The demand-supply mismatch gets more intense. Typically, the prices do become the casualty, right? So largest reason is that because the volumes in the market that we operate, especially in the south and Telangana, and I have mentioned that we do need some large projects to come back to the markets, the Kaleshwaram phase to the next phase of road construction beyond the Bombay-Nagpur having been completed. So there are other highways in the offing, they are talking about it. But till they come, the demand remains quite muted. So that is the biggest reason. And when, like I said, when the demand is low, everybody tries to book whatever volume they can book at whatever price they're getting. We may not do that, but others are more than willing to do it, right? So that's the explanation for prices not going up. Poor demand and other companies opting to do the business at lower prices.
On the expansion, if I got you right, you said that Devapur expansion is expected to complete by FY24, you said?
End of FY24, March 24.
Okay, and even the Tiroda grinding unit at that time.
That's right. That should be hopefully available a couple of months ahead of the brownfield expansion. But in the last quarter of FY24, I think we should be having both.
Oh, and what is the equipment ordering status at these units?
No, right now we are doing the detail engineering and deciding, what will be the right thing. But I've given you the sizing I've given you. But as of now, no orders have been placed.
Oh, so, you mean to say in less than 2 years or let's say 18 odd months, you would be able to do it?
Yeah. 18 months. It is the brownfield, 15 months should be good enough for us to do a brownfield expansion. So 15, even if we assume 18, we still have a few months in hand before the orders need to be placed.
Sure. And lastly, any update on the Rajasthan mines transfer? Which
they are imminent. I should hear about a formal approval at the government level very soon. The file has moved through various standards. So like I said, all I can say is just give me a few more days and maybe I can confirm after that. It's very, very close to, but till the time the orders come out on the government machinery, we can't really say that we have it. But in all likelihood, we should have the mines back with us very soon, which I said last quarter also, but between last quarter and this quarter, our file actually has gone through maybe another 5-6 levels.
Sure, that's great to hear. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, to ask a question, you may press star and one. The next question is from the line of Prateek Kumar from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, sir. My first question is on the domestic coal availability. So while our fuel mix have in favor of domestic coal, especially at the Telangana plant, but how in general is the availability of fuel as of now? Because there are a lot of reports suggesting shortage of domestic coal for non-priority sectors.
There is shortage of domestic coal. There is no denying that fact. And whatever is available, the priority is being given to, as we know, to the power sector. So far, we've had a tough 6 weeks in the financial year, and that's why, as I mentioned, we have booked some expensive imported coal to remain at least operative. Otherwise, we would have run out of fuel. I've already mentioned that, and that's why my inflation, as I said, in cost of fuel would be visible in the first few weeks of this quarter. It's been visible. But we typically we also know that you know this as the monsoon sets in early June, slowly gradually the pressures of demand from the domestic power producers it starts moderating a little bit, right? So maybe a few more weeks of difficulty, and then I hope the domestic coal availability definitely will improve. It always happens in April, May are always the worst months for domestic coal. So it's a cycle that we've lived through for many years. So hopefully, I'm still hoping that, you know, by June, these pressures start easing and we can resume the normal. That's why we haven't covered through imported coal too much. It's just a small, modest quantity we took just to remain, to be able to sleep better, let me put it that way. But hopefully, by June, this should get resolved. And like it every year it happens.
So it's nothing extraordinary related to the international coal price hike?
Extraordinary is to the extent that even linkage coal, they have ways and means of extracting higher price from us, right? The price is not fixed. They give you linkage and we'll give you coal, but the price is not frozen. So there is the catch. The prices do go up, but thankfully not as much as the prices of international coal, because end of the day, domestic coal linkage has the protection that the same coal is being supplied to other users, which are power plants, right? So at least there is overall control on domestic coal prices, because if all the power plants in India start using prices at the cost of the imported coal, you know the country will go bankrupt. Country means all the, starting with the electricity boards and NTPCs, everybody will just have to stop. So there is some safety mechanism in the linkage coals. Which when the supply is low, so today they are under obligation, they are supposed to supply us 90% of linkage coal, right? Now we have a letter from our coal supplier, which is Singareni Colliery, saying what has happened now because of central government dollars, they are actually invoking a force measure, saying that we can't give you 90% of the linkage coal because there is a force measure in the form of the central government directives, right? Which is when you start running, saying, okay, can I buy some imported coal? Because these guys will not give you the linkage coal. So these are the other nuances of having a linkage and still not being able to get the domestic coal, because somebody invokes a force measure, what do you do? And fortunately, unfortunately, in the agreements, the FSAs that get signed, they very clearly mention that any change of rules or directives by the central government will be considered force measure. It's complex. It's a lot more complex than perhaps seems in a discussion.
Right. Second, last quarter we had a discussion on this result, on the result that there are some new capacities which have come up in Maharashtra market. This is your core market. Anything you can push from these capacities which has also hampered pricing for your market? And how the incumbents in Maharashtra are responding to that?
Responding to that in the only way each company thinks fit. We, in our case, as I mentioned, we because of the replacement cost of coal, we said we will not sell OPC in many markets in Maharashtra because those markets are far off. We said we'll not sell it. In that the new competitors who put up capacity, they get an opportunity to sell because we are refusing to sell, right? Other competitors, other incumbents may not be taking that tough a call and they may still be willing to supply. So prices obviously become a casualty, as you know, when the demand is not growing but the supply is growing. And it always takes a few quarters for the entire thing to settle down. Right now it's hurting a lot more because of the volatility in the fuel costs. Otherwise, I mean, we are used to it. Wherever new capacity comes, it takes a little bit of, you know, tug of war, and finally it does settle down, but the anxiety this year is a lot higher because of the very high fuel costs. So how will these new competitors afford to sell something like OPC, because none of them has clinker production with them, they're all grinding units, right? And to put up a grinding unit at a far off distance and then having to sell more of OPC, it doesn't augur well for the new capital investment that's been made. So it's difficult times, so there's no clear answer on that. Yes, there is a heightened competition. Yes, there are heightened costs. How are we responding? We are saying I'm better off giving you the volume right now till my coal prices become okay. When the coal prices are better, even I may have to join the queue and say, okay, fine, I'm willing to supply you to see at prices which are lower. But I should be able to afford that.
Right. Thank you, sir, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, to ask a question, you may press star and one. The next question is from the line of Dipen Sheth from Buoyant Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, and thanks for the opportunity. I hope I'm audible.
Yes, Dipen, you are.
Good to speak with you, sir. I don't want to take away anything from the fact that you have fought back very well in the face of terrible rises in energy, power and fuel costs. But there's another part of your cost breakup which is interesting and which I can't figure out, which is that how have you managed to put a cap on material costs and employee costs? So sequentially, of course, there's a huge drop in employee costs. I believe there was some kind of one-off last quarter, and I'm not sure, but cost of materials would also include the royalty outgoes on limestone and all of that?
Of course, cost of material does include all of that. Absolutely. On the employee costs, look, it's like this. End of the year is normally the balancing quarter for the year in terms of cost. So throughout the year, we make some provisions expecting the payouts to happen. That's one part of the story, because obviously when variable pays this, that are there, so they're obviously internal budgets that we have. And we, so first two quarters, if you recall, the performance was much better than second half. And that made us hopeful that the full year we would like that to start over-providing for variable pay payouts, right, based on performance.
Some of that got reversed.
And some of that did get reversed. Partly also what's happening is that with some of the, I would say, attrition, which is part of life today, we are able to replace those people with talent that we have developed in-house. And those replacements which happen from in-house talent always work out a lot more cost-effective than hiring somebody from outside, right?
So that would have been my next question, because even on full year basis, your employee costs are capped at 152 crores. Aren't you afraid to lose talent? But you've given me a very good counter to that, and it's very credible. Okay, so if in-house talent is growing up into good talent.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that is our biggest strength. You'll see in the next few quarters also some major changes will happen with the people achieving their superannuation and all. All of that will be managed through in-house talent.
And raw material cost, even on a full year, look absurdly low if you ask me, and there's some solid fight back there as well. I can't understand how you can exercise any discretionary control over raw material costs.
No, it's just by becoming you are calling it cost management of raw material. I call it being sustainable. The entire company is focused on efficiencies, because every improvement in efficiency directly reduces the consumption of non-renewable resources on this earth. And that's the philosophy. That's what Samitra reminded me earlier, that we live that philosophy day in and day out, and I didn't talk about it. So it's just whenever there is pressure, the whole company responds to, and it's not coming from me. It's every person, including our workmen sitting at the plant, they are conscious of what we are doing in terms of consuming natural resources and how we can sort of work to improve on that. It's those things. There's no one one brainwave to manage this cost. This is a system developed over a long period of time.
So I'll keep my regard and my deep respect for your organization's capabilities on the side. But end of the day, on the raw material side, what are you doing? You're cutting limestone and crushing it. I mean, how much more efficient can you get at it? Give me an example.
Raw material is not just limestone. No.
Okay. Okay.
I think the biggest thing which is over previous year, since you're asking for it, let me call it out. Last year, we had suffered a huge amount of dislocation in terms of fly ash supply in certain months.
Okay.
And that fly ash came far more expensive because it came from 600 kilometers away, which we didn't have to do this year because we managed to find new resources closer to our place.
Excellent.
Right? So these are the responses. You suffer a crisis in 1 year, you somehow try to avoid that in the next year.
Right. I have
Limestone is one part, but don't forget, a significant amount of cost is going into my fly ash, which is a major raw material. And some other raw materials that we use, we managed to substitute those expensive minerals by things which were less expensive, for which we had to tweak our what we call the raw material mix. Now, that is the management. Yeah, so that's the management call that we keep taking, saying if one particular grade of laterite is becoming more expensive, now we say, can we use a cheaper one without impacting the quality of the clinker? And then we work to tweak the raw material mix again.
Super. I have my answer. Thanks very much, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Uttam from Axis Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and congratulations on a good set of numbers for the full year in this tough environment. Sir, my question pertains to CapEx. Since we are expanding our capacity and there will be around 2000 crore of rupees we will be spending on the this expansion. So how we are going to do CapEx for the same in FY23 and FY24? And what would be the and how date will look like in the next two years?
Sorry, how will the last part of the question be, Mr.? What
the date would look like?
Date would look like. Okay. As per the let's say visibility that we have as of now, the capex on the expansion projects this year should be in the region of 700-750 crores. That's our expectation to be able to spend to have the capacities available by the end of the next financial year, right? And balance of that will naturally happen in FY24.
Okay. And sir, what kind of date that we will be looking at taking at? Because even if in next 2 years, FY23, FY24, even if you do around 1,000 crores of operating cash flow, even we will be looking to take some date for the expansion. So what would be, what is your take on that?
My simple take is it's a function of first priority will be to use our cash flows to fund it to the extent possible, right? And only after that decide on how much debt I need to bring in. There's no thought as of now to bring in any equity. So it will be largely the internal cash flows, which will be mostly now the loan repayment liability, as you know, is fairly modest. After that, all the cash flows that come in will be invested in the new projects. Our indications as of now that in the current year, we may not have to borrow much for the project. I mean, if it's a small amount of 100, 200 crores, if we need it, we may go for it. And even by the end of financial year, I think total debt should be 1,000 crores, 1,100 crores. Sumitro, are you confirming that?
About 1,000 to 1,100 crores
at the end. That will be in FY24.
Yeah. FY24, okay. And sir, what is the current update on 10 megawatt WHRS plant?
It's under construction.
Okay, and when it will commission, sir?
Plan to commission it by the end of this financial year.
But, okay, sir. Okay, sir. Thanks for the answer. Yeah. That's all from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll take the last question from the line of Rajesh Ravi from HDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Some of the questions, follow-up questions have been answered on the cost front. On the balance sheet again, just wanted to, what would be the total capex that need to be spent on these two projects that you're looking at, Maharashtra and Telangana, and what would your peak debt that number you're looking at? If you could,
I think we just answered that question.
Yeah.
For the question ahead of you. Total capex you said for the expansion will be in ballpark 2,000 crores, out of which the debt, which hopefully will not need to raise it this year, but by next year it will be about 1,100 crores for the first phase. When we get into the second phase, which is either Rajasthan or Sitapur expansion, that time will be this, but FY24, it doesn't seem as it will need debt of more than this. Yeah.
Okay, and the current debt, how much payout would be, how much need to be reduced, or you are expecting to reduce? You will be borrowing incrementally 1,100 crore, but you may be retiring some of the existing debt also.
Rajesh, you help me just to improve the price of cement a little bit. I would want to pay the entire thing in 2 quarters.
Okay. Great, sir. Yeah, that answers my question. Thank you, all the best.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Naveen Sahadeo from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Just one question, sir, if I may, and more on the strategy front. Since these Rajasthan mines are likely to be coming back to us anytime soon, I just wanted to get some understanding that will we be going for some capex there immediately, or is there a possibility of getting an extension to the fact that by March 24 these mines have to be operational? Some color will be really helpful.
I don't think it's news to anyone that as of now we have not bought any land in Rajasthan. So the first thing we will start doing
is to start acquiring land the moment they confirm the lease back on us. I mean, I need that lease LOI to be released to us before I start buying land, because land in that area is not just the only capex which will happen in the next year and a half, at least maybe a full 2 years, only to acquire the land.
Exactly.
And, you know, land acquisition is a very small part of the total 7,000 cost. And if I have enough, and the follow-up question I know what I've been asked earlier in the previous meeting, so I can clarify that. If we manage to get enough land to start putting up the project, then we'll perhaps take Rajasthan's new project as a priority over Chitapur expansion. Because Rajasthan is a market in which we certainly want to get into as soon as possible.
Understood. That's helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Krupal Maniar for closing comments.
Thanks, Faizan. On behalf of ICICI Securities, I would like to thank the management of Orient Cement for providing us this opportunity to host the call, and thanks all participants for joining the call. Thank you very much. You may now conclude the call.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Krupal. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Manish.
Thank you.
Thank you,
sir. Thank you. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of ICICI Securities Limited, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.